John Brown's body lies a-moldering in the grave. John Brown's body lies a-moldering in the grave.
That's Pete Seeger there singing a folk tune that every child in America learned to sing for more than 100 years.
But his soul goes marching on.
It is still familiar, more than 150 years after John Brown's body was indeed laid in his grave. Brown, a fiery, uncompromising abolitionist, staged the worst terrorist attack in United States history. The bloody raid on the government armory at Harper's Ferry, Virginia on October 16, 1859, stood in the history books until the attacks of 9/11. John Brown was a towering figure of the 19th century, and his raid marked the end of the expectation that slavery in America would just go away on its own without a fight. Brown is largely forgotten today, even though historians agree he may have single-handedly set in motion the conflict that became the Civil War, by far the bloodiest this nation has ever seen. Tony Horowitz is an author and journalist who last visited Civil War history in his award-winning book, Confederates in the Attic. His new book is called Midnight Rising, John Brown and the Raid That Sparked the Civil War. Tony, good morning.
Good morning to you.
So, you know, your fans will understand that this is, in some sense, a return to the history surrounding the U.S. Civil War, which you did with your fantastic book, Confederates in the Attic, which was all about the living experiences of reenactors. But it seems that somewhere in writing that book, you asked the question to yourself, where did this all begin? Where did this sort of psychological shift in America that's still alive today, where did it begin? And the answer seems to be this book, Midnight Rising, about John Brown and the raid that you say sparked the Civil War.
I think that's correct. I mean, there have been countless books on the Civil War era, including my own. But I think we still struggle to comprehend how it is that Americans who, by and large, shared a common culture and language and religion came to slaughter each other by the hundreds of thousands in the 1860s. And I think John Brown and his raid are a window into that world and all the ideals and rage, really, that led to this national bloodletting.
And one of the things you describe so well in this book is the sense of division, but it was sort of a dormant division in terms of who was an abolitionist and who believed that there was some sort of incremental, almost sociological working out of slavery that was going to end it on its own. John Brown didn't believe either of those. I mean, he was an abolitionist, but he was much more aggressive and violent than most of the abolitionists. And he certainly didn't believe that things were going to go away of their own accord. Why did John Brown cross this line?
Well, as you say, most abolitionists were staunch pacifists. They believed in education and moral uplift. And many others hoped that slavery would sort of wither away. John Brown derides this as what he calls milk and water abolitionism. He thinks slavery is a state of war and must be met in kind. And you know, blacks and whites need to fight to bring it down. And that's really what set him apart.
You know, what about his upbringing prepared him for this? You know, in some ways you might say he had the same sort of upbringing as an Andrew Jackson. He was definitely in the, you know, a rural, you know, farm upbringing. It was a real struggle for him. What prepared him for this?
Yeah, it's not unlike Abraham Lincoln as well.
Indeed.
He has this sort of classically American background. He comes from old Yankee farming stock and is raised on the frontier and educated at a log schoolhouse. And he's actually something of a conformist during the early decades of his life. He adopts his father's trade of leather tanning, his father's strict Calvinism. But he also gets a hatred of slavery from his father, but also from the times. This is the period when abolitionism first emerges as an organized movement. And he's strongly influenced by this, but then goes his own way in believing that really struggle is necessary to win this fight with slavery.
Talking with Tony Horowitz, author of Midnight Rising, John Brown and the Raid That Sparked the Civil War. So John Brown, passionate abolitionist, is he a legend in civil rights or is he a legend in terrorism?
Well, he's certainly a legend in civil rights. He's been seen as a freedom fighter by generations of Black Americans. But he also can be viewed as a terrorist in the sense that he used violence for political ends and sought to cause terror and shock. I mean, he seizes this armory at Harper's Ferry not just because it has 100,000 guns, which, by the way, he doesn't even touch while he's there.
Right.
He wants to shock the nation by seizing this symbol of American power in the largest slave state in the country.
And this sense of shock, and it's really the preface of this book, is eloquent a sense of what it takes to shock Americans, you know, draws the line directly from Harper's Ferry to 9/11 in a sense that we can barely imagine the sense of shock that that Harper's Ferry raid represented to Americans in the 1800s, unless we look at what's just happened in the last 10 years.
Well, also, I think we look back at this era through the prism of the South's loss in the Civil War. It has this aura of underdog and lost cause, and we see the war and emancipation as inevitable, but it didn't look that way to Americans in the 1850s. And Brown's raid really forces the nation to confront both this great sin and this tremendous divide in the nation. So it is a great shock. And, you know, we haven't yet had these immense battles at Antietam and Gettysburg. It seems, looking back through the Civil War, that this is a minor affair. Not that many people die. But at the time, nothing like this had ever happened.
You know, Tony, if you had the chance to interview John Brown and were asking him, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, if everything he did in Harper's Ferry was worth it, considering the war that came after, what do you think his answer to that question would be? And do you think you would like this guy if you were standing next to him?
I think he would definitely say it was worth it. I mean, in a sense, he anticipates the Civil War. When he goes to the gallows, he says that, you know, this sin can only be purged with blood. So I think he wanted to bring on this great conflict, and he would have been gratified that it came and that it ended slavery so abruptly. On the other hand, do I like this man? That's a tough question. He's a difficult man to like in certain ways. He's almost an Ahab in his obsessive quest to end slavery. But I'm not sure it is important that we like this man. I think too often Americans want everything to be black and white, heroes and villains and people we can put in a Hollywood film. And, you know, he doesn't fit those molds.
No, but certainly he had the capacity to scare people even long after his death. I believe the death of the last Brown in his sort of ancestral home was a headline in a major American newspaper.
Yeah, he has this enormous brood. He fathers 20 children in all, many of whom die in childhood, and three others who die in his wars against slavery. But when his last living child, Annie Brown, dies in the 1920s, yes, it makes headlines. He really haunted America for decades and still does in some ways.
And you know the song, right?
Of course.
John Brown's body lies a-moldering in the grave.
Absolutely. So he's had a powerful impact on song, on lore, on art. Yet I would say we still don't really understand him or what he did.
Well, we'll understand him much better with this book, Midnight Rising, John Brown and the Raid That Sparked the Civil War. Tony Horwitz, the author, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
John Brown's body lies a-moldering in the grave. John Brown's body lies a-moldering in the grave. John Brown's body lies a-moldering in the grave. The soul goes marching on.
John Brown, freedom fighter or terrorist, what do you think? You can react to that or any other story at 877-8-MY-TAKE. It's a debate that still goes on. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
Yeah. The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. Funding for Detroit coverage on The Takeaway is supported in part by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, WKKF.org. The Takeaway is produced by WNYC and Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.